You're listening to Practice Growth HQ,
the podcast where thought leaders, industry experts, and thriving practice owners reveal their very best tips, tools, and strategies to help grow your healthcare practice faster.
PracticeGrowthHQ.com. Your thriving healthcare practice starts here.
Now, here's your host, Angus Pryor.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Practice Growth HQ, where we talk all about what's required personally and professionally to get your practice growing faster. Now today we're going to talk all about you as the CEO with my guest Matt Sitter. Matt completed an MBA with Dartmouth College before moving into various management positions in healthcare and technology industry. With a passion for optimizing performance, Matt became the CEO of Advantage Foundry Network in 2021, all the way from the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome, Matt.
Thanks, Angus. Good to be here.
Good man. Now, look, Matt, we like to start with the fast five, kind of shorter questions, shorter answers to help people get to know you quickly. Question one, where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Bay Area. So I've done a couple stints elsewhere, but made my way back.
Okay, very good, very good. Question two, favorite book besides your own?
So my favorite book is called The River Why. I don't know if I can remember the name of the author. It's not a very popular book, but it's about fly fishing and how you can have a hobby, but it shouldn't take over your whole life.
Is it The River W-H-Y?
W-H-Y.
Oh, okay, interesting. I've never heard of that one before. Question three, what is one of your superpowers?
One of my superpowers. So I took the StrengthsFinder assessment a long time ago and was helpful for me to understand a little bit more about myself. I didn't have language around everything. And one of the strengths that came across was personalization or individualization. And it's understanding how any one person can be effective within the whole, basically putting someone in a position where they can succeed, seeing what the whole needs, and then putting them in the right spot.
Well, that sounds like a very good match between your superpower and what you do for a living.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't end up doing things by accident, I don't think.
Good one. All right. Question four, something you wish your 20-year-old self knew.
Oh, gosh, there's a whole lot of things I wish I knew. You know, it's funny because I was in the right place at the right time with the internet revolution. You know, very first job out of college was doing all the stuff in the dot-com boom. And I said, no, thanks. You know, there's other things I'd rather do. And so I think I would have rather, you know, understood what the ramifications of the business would have been for that. And I probably could have done some similar things, but you know, kept on that track as well.
Okay, very good. And finally, Matt, something that you're grateful for?
I am grateful for my family. I got a great wife and two great kids and a massive Bernese Mountain Dog who's around here somewhere that's very lazy.
Okay, very good, very good. All right, well, our topic for today is about you, the CEO listener. But before we get into that, I know that you always like hearing people's entrepreneurial journey. So, Matt, give us the kind of 1 to 2 minute version of how it is that you've ended up as you are now.
Yeah, it is a long, strange trip. And I would say the first step of my journey was really partially athletic. So I grew up playing water polo, still play today, and not a tall guy. I'm about 5'8". And, you know, a lot of the guys out there who are good at it are 6'3 and above. And so I had to figure out ways to make the team operate well without being the biggest, strongest, fastest, most athletic person. And I think that got me on the track on like, hey, how do organizations and teams operate well? And spent a lot of time thinking about that. Post-business school, I ended up looking at healthcare systems primarily. How could I help around that? And was put in charge of teams that I did not share any of their functional expertise. So nurses, dietitians, doctors, software developers, medical billers, all these people, I couldn't have micromanaged them if I wanted to. And it still seemed to go pretty well. And that, again, led me to believe that, hey, I really like how organizations operate. In 2012, I joined an organization called the McChrystal Group, which was founded by a number of former special operators who were trying to apply their methodology into the private sector. And that was like taking this organizational and team stuff and putting it on steroids. And I also learned a lot about how networks operated, a lot of former defense intelligence analysts. And they really got me thinking about network analysis. And so all these things kind of coming together is like, hey, how do you actually supercharge what a individual needs to be able to get things done? Well, a lot of it's about the network that they have access to. And with the pandemic, we could actually bring people together that were harder to bring together before because everyone got used to being on Zoom. And so you could have a much broader network than you could before. And kind of all those things mashed together really is how AFN came about.
Okay, very good. Is it your business?
It is my business, yeah.
Okay, good for you. Well, we like that. So let's start right here. Our listeners are healthcare professionals. You know, our understanding is most of them are owners of the business and founders, but it's fair to say that your average healthcare professional does not see themselves as a CEO. I'm just going to be honest, like I'm dealing with healthcare professionals all the time, and many of them sort of fall into ownership, you know, in a sense that they didn't grow up thinking, wow, I can't wait to be the owner of a business. Instead, yeah. Many of them are healthcare professionals first and foremost. They're scientists. They like helping people. They understand the science. They like to be able to apply that to the patient in front of them. But they didn't necessarily get into this so that they could come up with kind of, you know, have to deal with all the headaches that you get from being a CEO. Just, I suppose, talk to the listeners about that, as it were, embracing your CEO-ness.
Yeah, well, and I think if you are a leader and you are trying to be exactly like another leader out there, that's going to be a really tough row to hoe because we all bring our unique experience, expertise, and perspective to it, and it's going to be a little bit different than all the other folks that are out there. So I would say the first thing is, you know, you can't necessarily be the leader that someone else is. I saw a great quote once, like, don't try and be someone else. That job is already taken. So recognize that you got to do something that seems and feels authentic to you that's around it. And when you're thinking about, when I am working with leaders, a lot of times for them to change how they're doing something, it usually takes some sort of reframing that's consistent with what their values are. So they're like, hey, I got into the healthcare business because I want to be providing great care. Well, one of the ways that they're going to have to provide great care is by having the best business that's possible. And so that can actually help them think about their responsibilities a little bit different, that they're applying leverage to the company that they've got because they're actually able to do something on a greater scale than if they were just a single practitioner.
Okay. So what are the biggest challenges that our CEO listeners face?
Well, I think, you know, I go back to what are the roles that you're actually trying to play within the organization? And everyone is relying on you for answers a lot of times. And so what answers are you actually supposed to have? And I think about three ways that a CEO should really be conceiving of themselves. One is this idea of the chief dot connector. So they're at a higher altitude than everyone else. They're seeing what's going on and they have more information than other people. They've got to consistently be helping other people in the organization understand, all right, that's where these dots connect. That's why you two are important to one another, really bringing different parts of the organization together. And they've got to be doing that on a consistent basis. They'll get bored of that message around which dots they're connecting a long time before everyone else is going to get it. So you've got to keep that rolling. I would also say they're head of market intelligence in some way. So the expectation is that they're going to understand where things are going within their business. You know, they've got to be thinking out loud when they're seeing new things happen within the business, because the people that are a part of the organization, they're actually thirsting for, hey, what's going to change out there as well. And then the last thing that I would say is really important is they've got to be the head of people, right? The people are where you get all your leverage from. And so that means that you're thinking about the culture in the organization and how you want people actually treating each other. The environment that you set is going to make the biggest difference on how successful you can be.
Wow, that is a brilliant list, listeners. Chief dot connector. I love that. And it's so true. You know, your perspective as a CEO, you just, I mean, I find myself doing this all the time. You just don't realize, you don't know what you know, you know, and sometimes it's like, oh, doesn't everyone realize this? Like, oh, no, that's
right,
That's your job, Angus, to communicate that. And then I think the head of market intelligence is really interesting too, because, you know, whether you're the principal dentist or physiotherapist or doctor or whatever the case may be, is you are connecting with people from your community and other healthcare professionals, and you'll get a bit of a sense of where the direction's heading. And then finally, head of people. And I would say to you, if I'm honest, that the, you know, the CEO's kind of air quote in the healthcare industry, you know, when they're the a principal of a practice, this is possibly the one that they struggle with most. As I say, they didn't get into this to be, you know, the kind of HR manager. How can they embrace the head of people part of their business and, you know, do a better job?
Well, I would go back to this thing that this is where all your leverage is going to come from. This is how you're going to be able to provide care for more people. And the important thing around when you're dealing with people is everyone's got different levers that they have. And how can you actually voice something in a way that is going to make it most resonant with someone? The thing that I always talk about is, can you identify what that person's values are? What are some of the things that they hold to be really important about themselves? And that's giving you the best clue on how you ought to be communicating with them. And also, it changes all of your communications when you're actually going into a conversation saying, hey, do I understand actually what Angus values? You're listening in an entirely different way, and people can see that. People want to hear that you're listening, and they want to hear that you know them in some way, shape, or form. That idea of identifying their values is a good shortcut on how to get there.
I really like that. We, as our executive team, have done, I mean, some of the listeners will have heard of the five love languages, which is a good thing to do with your partner. But then there's the, I forget the exact term for it, but it's basically the business equivalent, which is, I think, the five languages of appreciation or something like that. And that's invaluable as a leader. This is, you know, listeners, I hope that you're not finding yourself kind of at the point of exhaustion going, oh my goodness, like, it's all very well for you two to say this, but does that mean I've got to learn 10, 15, 20 personality styles? And of course, the bigger your organization gets, actually, you're not having to be the one-on-one leader of every person. You start to have some structure in there so that others can do it. But nevertheless, for my executive team, it's been enormously helpful for me to know that, you know, for one member of the team, their appreciation for them is spending time with them. For another member of the team, and I'm not making this up, I actually know who the people are. I know this person, that's what they appreciate. Another member of my executive team, it's about giving them a hand. And so when they ask me for something, my initial reaction as a CEO is, well, come on, I can find someone to delegate this to. But I know for this person, that's what really, you know, rocks their boat. So that I'll give them a little bit more of a hand than maybe the others. And then another member of my executive team, it's about gifts. Which was a curious one when it turned up, because I was like, really? What am I going to, you know, buy you a, it's a lady, you know, our operations manager, am I going to buy you a set of pearls every time you do something good? But I thank God, you know, I've learned since then that part of the appreciation for them is just, honestly, just getting a little meme or whatever, some sort of thing that they get a sense of it, something a little bit tangible, but it, it really makes a difference to them. So this stuff can be enormously powerful.
Well, when you think of it, it's a lot more expensive in terms of time to be cleaning up messes rather than to get ahead of them, right? And so if you're thinking about, like, hey, you know, this little ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, you know, just a few things that you're thinking about to be able to do it. And in fact, I, you know, in one of the consulting engagements that I had a number of years ago, probably a decade ago now, I could not get this person who I was supposed to be helping at this company to pay any attention to me. And she let slip one day that she likes fruit covered in dark chocolate. And so every week I was making sure that she had one of those on her desk. And it took a little while to wear her down, but eventually I got there. You know, if you are listening and paying attention to someone, they're going to give you some clues on how to actually work with them well. And that's going to make your life a heck of a lot easier in the long run.
Yeah. And I think, listeners, don't be too worried about feeling like as though you are, quote unquote, giving someone special treatment. I mean, I think the one size fits all, you know, if I've taken anything from my time with Matt, like, this, it's not one size fits all. You know, you're actually doing a kind thing, and you're doing a great thing for your business by adapting how you relate to each of the individuals. Now, Matt, you talked about time. How can our very busy healthcare professionals, how can they optimize the return on their time?
Yeah, and I do think in some ways, we all have to be students of communication, right? So when you think about an in-person meeting is literally the most expensive use of time that you can come up with. You know, you have to make sure that everyone's there at the same time. They got to be prepared. They got to be ready to communicate, things like that. And so when you're thinking about having a meeting with folks, right, one of those things that they either need to be really interaction heavy. So making sure that people are understanding what's going on, or because you're taking up time talking about something within this meeting, you're communicating the collective value around it. If you just looked at the physical expense of that meeting, you know, you got 10 people in, you're taking 10 people's time for 1 hour. It should be telling some sort of story on how important something is to the business on what you're doing and thinking about, hey, how can I actually make sure that I'm moderating my form of communication based on that? And, you know, it is to get everyone interacting at the same time, they're going to respect a lot more if you're thinking about like, hey, I'm using this time as wisely as possible around it. I would say also when we're thinking about your audience in particular, some of these folks are operators or practitioners as well, right? And so if they're doing their job as a practitioner, it means they literally can't be doing anything else. So what are those things where they should be doing that as a practitioner versus when they're doing other activities, it ought to be applying leverage to the business. You ought to be able to get 5x, 10x out of that period of time. So making sure that they're valuing their time correctly. If it means that, you know, if they get joy out of actually treating patients, they should definitely block some of that time off because that's going to be what refills their cup. Mm. But they also got to be thinking out, hey, how am I actually applying leverage to the business? Because these things that I know are helpful to everyone else in the business in a way that I can't apply it in the same way as just being an operator or a practitioner.
Okay, good one. Look, two thoughts pop into my head. The first is that depending on the size of the organization, many of the practice principles are often the chief generator of income in the practice. That's okay. The reality. Yeah. I mean, they're not straight out of college, university, you know, they've worked in the field for 10, 20, 30 years. And so there's a certain level of trust and it's like, Angus, but I'm sort of happy to do 4 days a week on the tools, as we call it, you know, and I can spend my 1 day a week working on the business. And depending on that person's aspiration, that may be the most sensible thing. You know, I read a former guest on the podcast. He had a special interest in dentistry, and he said that that level of production, as they call it, the revenue from that person is really important. But where I've got that time, and maybe as a result of listening to this, I'm going to expand the time that I spend working on the business. Matt, like what sort of activities should I be doing to maximize the ROI, that kind of 5X, 10X? That sounds good. How do we do that?
Yeah. So one of the things I would think about, first of all, is just, hey, if you're the chief revenue generator within a business, I would say that that's fantastic. You're a tremendous asset, but you are also the business's greatest liability. There's all sorts of things that can happen. As a dentist, you rely crucially on your hands. Like all it takes is for you to break a finger or something like that, and that changes entirely. So thinking about like, hey, you know, what are these risks that I have in the business, and how am I actually obviating some of those risks? I always like folks to think about the networks that they're in as well. So if you picture probably most of the clinics that you're in, they're a fairly closed network. Everyone knows each other really well.
Yeah.
They have a lot of the same information that they're dealing with. They can be really resilient against problems. But what happens there is that not a lot of new ideas are coming into play, and you are limited in terms of reach. And so thinking about just from that network perspective, who else are you connecting to that would not fall within this closed network group? You know, building some of these relationships is really important, but building some other relationships where you have access to new people, it allows you to expand that group of people that you're talking to, but also you become a much better integrator of ideas. You're hearing a lot of unique things. And I would say also, you can learn things from people in all walks of life. So I would say if you're talking to people just that are running healthcare practices, you're probably going to be missing out on some ideas, some aha moments that you might not get otherwise. If you've got this intellectual curiosity where you're asking people questions on what they're doing, it might not be a perfect match, but you'll learn something. If you can be doing something five degrees different and that changes your effectiveness, that's time well spent.
That's a great insight. Look, the truth is that Practice Growth HQ was established because we do want to learn from, basically healthcare professionals outside of our own field. It's not like, we've had on the show up until this point sort of doctors, dentists, physiotherapists, psychologists, et cetera, et cetera. And so that sense of wanting to learn from what people are doing outside is really what the leaders are doing. It's kind of where do I see something that's in some other industry that wouldn't be normal right in my industry, but like what an opportunity. I think your comment at the beginning about the liability is a real interesting one too, isn't it? If you, listener, are the chief revenue producer for your business, which is a reasonable strategy, you will definitely bring in more income. But on the other hand, it is a bit of a liability, isn't it? If you, fall off a ladder on the weekend or something, like that's one thing we've got to be really careful about. So, Matt, you kind of alluded to this, and I wanted to talk about the benefit of leaders being within a peer group because, again, for many of the listeners, they're like heavily on the tools. You'll look at their day and it's like starts at 8:30 or 9 and it goes through to 5 and I'm seeing 20, 30, 40 patients in that time. Like it's just relentless. But how do the leaders get the benefit of being, learning from peers?
Yeah. And I think leadership's a tough job, right? Full stop. You're expected to have all the answers often, and you can't always be transparent with everyone that works for you, right? You can't tell them absolutely everything. They're expecting you to come with some degree of confidence. For you to be vulnerable in front of all your people is just hard to do sometimes. And so when you think about a peer group, leadership can be a really lonely spot. But also when you're in a peer group, the reason why I really like the idea of being in a peer group with people who are not necessarily in your industry is they don't have any formal monetary stake in what you're doing. It's not like you can be stealing business from each other or anything like that. It's like, hey, I'm here to support you. And if you're in a peer group also, you don't have to be the one who has all the answers either. There's times where you can sit back and listen and just say like, hey, all right, I'm one of 10 people within this. That means like the maximum amount of time that I should be talking within this meeting is 10%. I can be on receive mode and just be learning. And this doesn't mean that I have to have that pressure of solving every single problem that's out there. And so it can be a way for them to recharge in some way and also be able to take their expertise in their practice and what they've developed. There's going to be all sorts of novel things that they know that someone else won't. The ability to share some of those things is great as well. You can get a really good feeling about that generosity.
Yeah, I think it also sort of crystallizes your own thoughts too. Sometimes they say, I'm going to butcher the expression, but it's one thing to sort of hear and then it's another thing to do. But then the third step is to teach in a sense. When you're in that peer group, it's kind of like, I find that I'm crystallizing my thoughts on things all the time because I'm talking to different people and then I'm sort of explaining to them. And then, you do that a few times and you start going, oh, actually, I can see there's an idea there that perhaps I hadn't really given that much thought to. The other thing that I did was I ran a mastermind. This was just within a particular healthcare group, but none of them were they weren't even close to each other, like in some cases, not even in the same state. So we didn't really have that problem of them worrying about cutting each other's lunch. And it was fascinating. I think for many of them, the biggest thing that they got out of it was just being there with their peers, and that they could, they could at times say, you know what? This business is tough. These elements suck,
For sure.
At one point in my life, Matt, I worked at the Australian Embassy in Washington, and I'll never forget the ambassador there, which in Australian sort of political circles, like honestly, this guy would have been in the top, I don't know, 30 or 40 people in the country, like literally, you know, the Australia's ambassador to Washington, that's kind of a big deal, you know, other than being the prime minister and a few of the other ministers. And even he said it can be lonely at the top. And I was thinking, this is a guy oozing with self-confidence. You wouldn't get to where you do. And yet that's what he said. I thought that was really insightful. Matt, as we start to wind up, talk to us about the human network within organizations.
Yeah, so when you think about networks of people, information is the oxygen in them. And so think about how is information actually flowing around? That makes a big difference. And not only what do I need to know, but what do I know that other people might need to know? You want to kind of set that sort of knowledge out there. And context becomes really important around this. So one of the things that we saw in the pandemic for people who are working remotely is that transactional communication became a lot more common, right? That's like, hey, I need something from you. Are you giving it to me? And it's really easy to measure because did I get what I wanted and did I get it fast? But the amount of context that you had wore down pretty quickly on it. And so people learned helplessness essentially around it. They said, hey, you know, I'm not going to go out on a limb. I'm just going to wait for something to be asked for from me. And so when we think about being able to put initiative into that human network and making sure that people are, you know, willing to go that extra mile, it's something that you've got to constantly be feeding on what you're trying to look at. And I would say also, you know, there's when we're thinking about networks as well, sometimes it gets a bad rap and people are like, oh, you got to be out there networking, things like that. I would say, think about how you're actually learning from someone else. How can you reframe this in a way that allows you to actually have it correspond with the values that you've got? How do you reframe it in a way that, hey, I'm helping my business or I'm helping my patients? What's that thing that's going to help you think about it in a way that is more appealing to you as a person?
Awesome. Well, look, Matt, I've really enjoyed our discussion today. And hopefully for the listeners, you've got a stronger sense of kind of embracing, owning the fact that you are the CEO. And, you know, there are challenges that's come with us, but there's also there's lots of thoughts, lots of sources of inspiration and help. Matt, for people who want to learn more about you or your organization, Advantage Foundry Network, what should they do?
Yeah, so they can go to our website, which is afn.global, no.com or anything like that. .global is the endpoint on there. And I can be found on LinkedIn pretty easily. I always like to say, you know, I once heard that you can remember that someone is a baker, then they're easier than their last name is Baker. Well, my last name is Sitter. So just picture a guy sitting down and you're going to be able to figure out where to find me.
Okay, good man. All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Matt. Really appreciate it. All right, everyone. So we've covered a lot in that interview, haven't we? And as I like to say, knowledge is great, but it's really applied knowledge that makes all the difference, doesn't it? So as I ask you every week, what is one initial step you can take right now as a result of what you heard today? Make sure you go and do that thing before you go on to the next thing in your life. Otherwise, if you got some value from this show, please head to where you heard it. Leave us a lovely 5-star review to give us the encouragement to bring you more great content every week on Practice Growth HQ.
Thanks for listening to another info-packed episode of Practice Growth HQ with Angus Pryor.
Any links mentioned, along with an entire transcript of the show, can be found at practicegrowthhq.com.
And to make sure you never miss another episode, go now to Apple Podcasts or wherever you heard this show and hit subscribe.